Welcome to Hype episode 157. My name is Selena and I'm here with Pam this week to talk about this week's most recent and most exciting entertainment news stories from hypeable.com. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Selena.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Hey, listeners, how are you?
Hey, guys.
It's hype. No. Oh my god. Hype, guys. Anyway, this is a bad start to the show. Anyway, we know how to get it back on track because as always, before we get into the show, we want to remind you of the contact information if you want to let us know what you've been doing in fandom this week or anything else, react to anything we talk about on the show, as many listeners have done, which we will get to at the end of the show. You can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter at hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram at hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can, of course, if you want to, you can join us on Patreon and become a patron at patreon.com/hypepodcast. And over there, we have bonus segments and we have videos and we have all kinds of fun stuff. This week's bonus discussion available to Patreon subscribers will be a belated National Book Lovers Day discussion where we talk a little bit about our favorite YA books. So that's going to be fun. And that kind of perfectly ties into how we hype this week, which is where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. This is a continual saga on Hype Podcast a while back when we first started when we first launched the Patreon and we were doing our first videos. One of the first things we did was reviews of the first book in the Raven Cycle series by Maggie Stiewater, where we each took a bit of the book and we talked about it. And I think Merrima had the first part, and then I think I had the second part, and then you had the third part, and then Merrima had the last part. And I never got further than my own part because I was not a fan. I did not think this was a very good book. But then last week, like I think Thursday or something, I was like, you know what? I should give it another chance. I don't even know why I decided to do this, but I did. And by Saturday, I had finished the whole thing. The whole cycle. I'm done. I read it all. It was so good. So that totally turned me around, which in the second half of the first book, which was quite spectacular. Have you read it? How far did you
get? Yeah, I really liked it. I finished it. Honestly, hype confession time. For some reason, missed the part where you just stopped reading past your part. I really thought that you had finished this already and you had like made up your mind because you had finished the book. And I was like, okay, fair. Like, we don't all have to like the same thing. Like, Selena it must not be for her. I had no idea you hadn't finished, or I probably would have pushed you to read past it. It's so funny.
Like, the thing is, and I'm not going to give any spoilers away. I'm going to do for my video this week for Patreon a more in-depth reaction where I do talk about spoilers, and you can look forward to that one if you're a Patreon subscriber. I don't want to give any spoilers away here because obviously it's coming out as a TV show. Many people might not have read it and I don't want to give the game away. But basically, up until like for most of the first book, I thought it was really predictable and really sort of unengaging, but then something happens towards the end of the first book. Like, there's a reveal that's kind of like, it's such a thrill because I didn't really see it coming, and I think you know what I'm talking about. I don't know if you saw it coming, if I'm just stupid, but I really didn't see it coming, and that was like, oh, okay, so there's more to the story than I thought there was. And then the second book, which is, you know, expands much more, it shows a lot more of Ronan's perspective. And obviously, guys, I get it now, Ronan Lynch, I understand. I did not get the all caps squealing about Ronan Lynch before, but I do now. He's amazing.
How many books have you read?
All four.
You've read all four.
I wasn't just proud of reading one book.
Well, I would have considered that an achievement. Okay, I have some catching up to do, and it's really funny.
No, I read it all.
Because I also have in my possession an arc of Maggie Stiefvater's next book, which is All the Crooked Saints. I think that's what it's called. Let me double check here. Oh, no, I don't even... Well, it's somewhere in my bookshelf. Yeah, so I need to read The Raven Cycle so that I can read that. And then...
Yes.
Not that they're connected, but it would be nice too.
You do need to read it. Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, once I got to book two, and then it became kind of like, because I'm going away next week, and I have the final book in print. So I was like, okay, well, I can finish the first three in ebook, then I can bring the final one on holiday. But then I ended up just reading the final one, so if you're not there either yet, I don't really want to go too far into it. I will say overall, really enjoyed it. The second book was probably my favorite. And I stand by my Marauder's interpretation. And this is something that I want to elaborate on in my video as well, because like, I don't want to be this crazy conspiracy theorist person. And I don't believe, like, if Maggie Stillwater says that it's not based on the Marauders, then I believe her. But there is so much that speaks, that feels like it comes from the same well, that it is just really, there were so few things in the book, the twist in the first book being like one of the only exceptions, where I didn't know where it was going because everything else just fit the parameters of a Marauders AU fanfic so closely. And I think that's really interesting. So I want to talk a little bit more about that in my video, and I don't want to get too much into it here. But yeah, I finished it. I read it. I would love to hear listeners' thoughts if you've read it all, and what a ride it was, and how much I appreciate all of the love for Ronan Lynch now, because what a character. Anyway, that was my hype. I've been busy. What have you been doing?
Well, I was catching up on a few pilots that I haven't seen yet. I'm going to talk about, like, one show that I just started binge-watching in TV Show of the Week, because I feel like this is kind of cheating because it is TV show. And I don't want to talk too much about it because I feel like I'm not the right person to say whether or not this is a good show or a bad show, but I do want to just mention that I did watch the first episode of Netflix's Atypical, which centers around a boy that is on the autism spectrum. And the reason that I don't want to say like, oh, this is like the best or like this is the worst, is because I don't have enough familiarity with autism to make that call. As a story, it was enjoyable, but again, like, I'm not informed enough on autism to really kind of talk about whether or not this is something that's going to be wonderful for the community or hurtful for the community. That being said, Sonia, who writes for Hypeable, has an interesting review up on Hypeable, and she is a mother of two autistic children. I think it's like both of her kids, right? Yeah, so she, I mean, her viewpoint is going to be more, I think that would be more beneficial for you to read if you're interested in hearing about the show from somebody that has direct experience with people that have this. So yeah, that's just all I wanted to say, that I did tune in. And if you're closer to this subject and would like to weigh in, we'd love to hear what you have to say. So shoot us an email and let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's move on into the news and then we'll get back to TV. Actually, very soon, because we only have a couple of non-TV news stories to talk about this week. So why don't you kick us off with our favorite properties that won't die, literally. One is all about not dying, yes. And one is all about death.
Real or not real? Unfortunately, this is very much real. Oh, Lionsgate, we can't escape you. You've brought so many of our young adult dystopian novels and fantasy novels to life over the years. And
they just, like, can't stop.
Like Selena said, they won't die. They are going to live forever. And we write this story every few years, but why not bring it up again? Lionsgate has rekindled the rumor that they are perhaps ready to revisit not only The Hunger Games, but also Twilight. So they're talking about potentially greenlighting a few spinoffs surrounding these two series. This is, again, nothing that we haven't heard news of before, but I'm sure that they're even more inspired to do so now that J.K. Rowling has gone forth with not just Cursed Child, which is, of course, a continuation of the Potter series, but also Fantastic Beasts, which kind of plays around with that world, but in a different era. So given the attention that has gotten, I won't be surprised if they actually do go through with this. But at the same time, it's kind of like, well, put your money where your mouth is, Lionsgate, because you keep telling us this and then not giving us anything.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting is that it seems, apparently, according to them, it seems to come down to the authors. And it seems like it's the authors that aren't really interested, because Stephanie Meyer is busy with her new Not Mermaid TV show. And Suzanne Collins, as far as I know, isn't really, I mean, she's said goodbye to Hunger Games, so I don't really think she's particularly interested in going back to that world. So I think they're kind of just Maybe the reason they keep bringing it up is because they hope that sort of fan pressure will convince the authors that there's like a desire for this beyond just let's make a bunch of money together.
I mean, look, I could tell you like off the top of my head a few stories that I'd like to see expanded upon in both of these worlds. But the problem is that you might never actually be satisfied with what they give you. Like for Twilight specifically, I always thought it'd be really interesting to go back and get a closer look at Alice's history. Carlisle has been around forever. He is like quite literally a dinosaur. There's a lot they could play with around there in terms of the politics and the semantics and the rise and fall of the Volturi. In terms of like the Hunger Games, Finnick is a fan favorite. He'd be like a very easy kind of target for a spinoff, and people have been pretty adamant about being interested in seeing even his journey through the games and things like that. And I know that they've expressed some interest. So it's not like it's like weird per se, but it is kind of one of those instances of like, do we really need this? Or like, will people care if they're not tied to the core character group that we...
I think that the issue also is because I know that obviously they are thinking about things like Star Wars and The Hobbit and Harry Potter, which have all sort of successfully expanded with movies that go beyond the initial source material. You know, Harry Potter, of course, is the close example because they basically took a bunch of new characters and they set it in this world, and it seems to be going really, really well and is kind of keeping the franchise alive. But I think the issue and the reason that this is struggling to get off the ground is that a property like Twilight and Hunger Games, like not in terms of quality, because there's no need to sort of quantify that, but just in terms of scope, like there just isn't the same need or reason to go back. In Twilight's case, it's just, you know, the story you mentioned, sure, I'm sure they would be interesting, but they're also extremely small. You know, they're very personal stories about like one particular character's struggle to get to the place they are when we meet them, and it's not necessarily going to be interesting to a wide audience, because why would it be? And Hunger Games, I think, is maybe a little bit more interesting because there is the scope, like, because Twilight is not, it's not a world, like there isn't one unifying thing. Like in Harry Potter, there's so much unifying mythology, and obviously the way that Joe has chosen to tie it all into Grindelwald and Voldemort is kind of, I think, what has really piqued people's interest, because it's not just some random dude, you know, it's like it's tied into the story we know, and Twilight wouldn't necessarily do that. I think Hunger Games would a little bit more, but it would also just be because of the way that the universe works, it would be these isolated, closed stories. Like any Hunger Game that they chose to show would be its own little enclosed redo of the first movie. So I think there might be interesting things to work with. And I think that what they would have to do would be kind of to bank on like a big star, you know, like I don't even necessarily think they should get the original actors back, because I don't think they're big enough draws. Like in the case of like a Carlisle movie or something, like I don't think that's going to work. And I also think that aside from that, you can also just look at something like Divergent. It's not that the audience isn't there. It's that the audience isn't enough. So I think they, you know, I think Harry Potter is the exception rather than necessarily the rule for them, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. But I don't think that they don't see it that way, you know?
No. Well, yeah, but then again, like nothing's happened. Like clearly something is...
No. I mean, like not necessarily from the author's point of view, but like from the studio's point of view.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's kind of like going into your next story. It kind of shows their commitment to making this a thing.
I mean, honestly, I guess the rule is just follow in the footsteps of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
It's worked for Harry, so why not for anything that Lionsgate has ever brought to
equally magical worlds.
I know. So get this, you guys. Like, again, this is not anything we haven't heard before. We have reported in the past on Hypeable about potential Hunger Games and Twilight theme parks coming to life, but South Korea will legitimately have one come 2019. Lionsgate announced on Tuesday, kind of on the heels of this whole, like, we'd like to continue the saga situation, that they had officially sold its movie property rights to a company called Landing Jeju Development Co. So they're a really big theme park operator, and they're in the process of opening a Lionsgate movie world at Jeju Shinhwa World, I think that's how you pronounce it, in South Korea. So this is kind of interesting because, honestly, I feel like if things like The Hunger Games and Twilight need to have a theme park, like, the best way to do it would be the way that they've set this up here. So it's not necessarily going to be, like, one park dedicated to Twilight, one park dedicated to The Hunger Games. They're actually going to be opening one full park, and it'll have different zones, kind of like Disney or Disneyland or whatever. And each zone will correlate to a specific big blockbuster movie that Lionsgate has released. So among the films set to be brought to life in this new theme park, you'll see stuff from The Hunger Games, stuff from Twilight, stuff from Now You See Me, and also from Lionsgate's upcoming Robin Hood Origins story set to hit the big screen in 2018. This is set to open sometime in 2019, so it looks like they're going for a speedy grand opening, and I guess we'll just have to wait and see what they do with this idea, but like it or not, it's coming.
Yeah, sure. This is when I could imagine something actually a lot more like the studio tour in Leavesden as opposed to like a theme park, because I just think no matter how you look at it, calling it a theme park, like whether it's Forks, Washington, or like a literal dystopian death camp for children, like it's not gonna, I don't see how that's a theme park. I could see how it would be like a movie, like here's the props and, you know, here's the costumes or whatever, but this seems a little like,
yeah,
not very tasteful.
No, and to be, you know, I actually did go to the Hunger Games exhibit. They had a touring exhibit, I think it's still touring, when it hit San Francisco, and read up a report about that for Hypeable. And what they were able to do with that exhibit is amazing, because The Hunger Games, in terms of sets and costumes and things like that, did a really fantastic job of bringing these worlds to life. But again, like you said, theme parks are supposed to be kind of like happy, even if some parts are like dark. You know, like Universal in Orlando has like a Nocturne Alley area. It's a little seedy. But you don't necessarily want to go to like a tour of the arenas, you know? And even in the case of like past Hunger Games theme park ideas where they'd want to center it around, you know, District 12 or whatever, it's like, well, that's even more depressing, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Or even like the Capitol, because it's like, that's everything that you should hate about this world.
That's the thing. We are the Capitol. Like, making a Hunger Games theme park is literally what the Capitol would do. So sad. Like, the irony is totally lost on them. Anyway, there is actually, if they were going to make a theme, actually they did, they are going to make a theme park. I'm not going to be able to go because it's in America, but we're going to move on to another property that I think is somewhat more optimistic, though definitely dark, has its dark forces as well. So there's some new stills in lieu of a trailer, which is very overdue now, actually, case, you know, side note, that the Star Wars The Last Jedi, we've seen some new images of Rey, we've seen some new images of Kylo Ren and Luke and a new, you know, red stormtroopers. It's called the Praetorian Guard, but they basically look like red stormtroopers. And, you know, Leia and Poe and Finn and Rose and a bunch of locations and stuff. And they look really cool. And you can check them all out at Hypeable. Along with the images which were released on EW, we've gotten some new sort of teasers about what to expect from The Last Jedi, including the circumstances surrounding Luke's disappearance and the state of mind he's in when Rey comes in. Basically, Mark Hamill explains that Luke made a huge mistake in thinking that his nephew, Ben Solo, was the chosen one, so he invested everything he had in Kylo, much like Obi-Wan did with my character. So basically, Luke is trying to recreate the bond between Luke and Obi-Wan, and it ends up being more like Obi-Wan and Anakin, I guess. So Hamill continues, and he is betrayed with tragic consequences. Luke feels responsible for that. And then we move on to Daisy Ridley, who kind of explains that when she shows up, he's not going to immediately be like, oh yeah, I'm going to get back in the race. So we're probably going to see him struggle a little bit with that before he takes on a, you know, a more active role. we also had some, you know, everything to do with Carrie Fisher's role in this movie is obviously going to be heartbreaking. We have learned that she's going to have a good send-off from the movie and not die, which is obviously good to know. We've also heard that her relationship with Poe is going to sort of be developing in this movie. He's always going to be like a surrogate son for her, which is so sad, and I'm laughing so that I don't cry because it's terrible. As for Finn and Rose, who's played by newcomer Kelly Marie Tran, he's sort of finding himself at a crossroad. He's wanting to leave the resistance behind, and Rose sort of ends up being an inspiration to him. She's kind of described as this normal person who sees him as a hero. You know, he's a hero of the people, and he is finds himself at a crossroad where she helps him make the decision about which road to take. So yeah, there's a bunch of more information over in Hypeable, but these were the things that I found the most interesting. Does anything in it like sort of stick out to you?
I mean, it sounds so cliche to say, but like all of it, I'm you know, I'm just so, yes. But because this is like the most inside look we've gotten at what we can expect from all these characters we were introduced to. Yeah, I know, right? It's like we have a clear idea now of everybody's motives, basically. And now it's kind of just up to what's going to happen when this movie hits theaters. But I mean, and all of these characters, it's like they've set it up so that they could go either way. Like, you know,
I know, which is good. At least like there's not, you know, they only give the beginning away, but I do think it is interesting, and it's interesting to see. I mean, honestly, for me, the Poe and Leia thing is probably what I was most, because we already got like tiny, tiny hints of that. I think it was more like headcanons really in the first movie of how their relationship might have been built up, because he was, you know, clearly so in awe of her. And so to see them have that relationship, especially considering the double heartbreak that she's experiencing with the loss of Han Solo and her son, then I think that relationship could potentially be really beautiful. And I hope that they sort of, I mean, I believe them when they say that they're going to find a good way to send off Leia, and that's going to be super sad, but hopefully good. And then I really, you know what? I'm just going to say, I really hope that Finn and Rey kind of meet up again, because I know there's so much talk about his dynamics with Poe and his dynamics with Rose, and that's great, but like, I really enjoyed the dynamic between Finn and Rey, and it's not like a shipper like together or not, like that's kind of irrelevant. I thought that the two of them worked so well together in the first movie, and I would, like, I'm kind of a little bit wary of how much they're going to split up their stories, because I think that they work so well together. So yeah, I worry about that, to be honest. It seems very split up. Like, it seems like Finn and Poe and Rey are on very separate journeys, isn't it?
And we talked about that too when the first trailer came out.
Yeah.
So, and so all signs point to that. But at the same time, I guess if you're, like, not that we should, but if you're comparing it to kind of like the original trilogy, our core three characters did spend a lot of time apart before they came back together. So
it's true. Yeah, it's true.
All right. This next news story made some pretty big waves in the entertainment industry. As everybody knows, Shonda Rhimes is kind of ABC's showrunner darling. She has completely taken over Thursday nights, and she's consistently been, you know, I feel like every time Upfronts come around, she's got a new idea for a show that's going to get greenlit. So she announced that she's actually leaving ABC, and she's inked an overall deal with Netflix, which is huge for Netflix since Shonda shows tend to do very, very well. But it's a big blow to ABC because they won't have a creative mind like her around anymore. The important thing to note here is that none of the shows that are currently on air, Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, they're not moving to Netflix. It's just like new entities that will be housed over on Netflix. And this kind of marks an end of an era for the network too, because that's over 10 years that they've been working together. And it'll be interesting to see who the next Shonda is, so to speak. Not that anybody can kind of like replace her, but they've been kind of building this dynasty together. And it's exciting though to see what she'll do with Netflix, because the thing about primetime, no, I mean, not primetime, networks on primetime is that you can only go so far with a story. And with Netflix, you have the luxury of not having to adhere to ratings or anything like that. Not ratings, like FAA ratings. Like she could go like unrated or mature or things like that and kind of maybe flesh out some of the storylines that she might have not been able to tell on ABC.
Yes, that's like, I feel like that's going to be really interesting because I think what Shonda has done on ABC, particularly with How to Get Away with Murder, but really with all of them, I think like she's really pushed some of the boundaries. Like How to Get Away with Murder is something that I would expect to see on Netflix almost. You know, the things they've done. I kind of tuned out, to be honest, because it got too scary. Like, not scary, but, like, uncomfortable for me. Like, it's a very uncomfortable show, and they killed off one character. I'm not going to say who it was, but I felt like that was just like, okay, you know what? I'm not really here for that, which was unfortunate, but I did think it was a really, really good show, and I think that was sort of... I almost don't want to say that Netflix gives her more scope because she already pushed it pretty far on ABC, but I do think... It opens, because I'm pretty sure that all of her ABC shows are like full season, 23 episode dramas, right? So on Netflix, she's going to have a much more free reign in terms of what kind of show she's going to build, which I'm really looking forward to. And then as for ABC, I think it's going to be interesting because like the shows are all going to still continue. Like Shondaland isn't going anywhere, so she'll still have, or the shows will still be carrying on, but Shonda was also so responsible for so much of the series or the network's diversity, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how they fill that gap, I guess. Don't want to end up like CBS.
Well, yeah, and that's a really good point, but you know, it's so funny because you think about like the impact that she has made. Like people forget because I think that in a lot of ways, TV, they have been pushing the envelope for so long now that we're almost like not shocked when they take it certain places. But when Grey's Anatomy first started, like it was a big deal, for example, for Shonda to put like penis and vagina into so much of the dialogue, even though it was like mm-hmm. medical and stuff. And it's just like so silly to think about things like that having to like... To cause like red flags to get thrown up. That's why like the whole like stop looking at my vajayjay thing was such a big deal, is because she had to find different ways to say things that shouldn't have been a big deal to say. So she's done a lot in terms of that, and it will be interesting to see if the network keeps growing and still keeps pushing the envelope, or if it stays stagnant because they don't have a mind like her that's like pushing them to go beyond.
Yeah, that's interesting. Oh, I guess we'll have to see. So staying with Netflix, we've got a bunch of actually Netflix-related stories this week. And the first one is I don't remember who it was, but someone on Twitter was like, you better talk about this on Hype, so I'm going to do that, which is The Crown. Oh my gosh, The Crown is coming back for a second season on Netflix, obviously, later this year. And we've got our first look teaser trailer, which is really more of an actual trailer because it's pretty long. Which follows Elizabeth, like the first season obviously is already on Netflix now. You can go watch it, or you can go and read my reviews over on Hypeable, because I was so obsessed with it. It's so beautiful. It's basically 10 episodes of costume and you know, set design extravaganza, and Claire Foy is a young Queen Elizabeth II, and she just does such a fantastic job. Matt Smith is her husband, Prince Philip. And the second season is actually also the last season with the two of them, because after that, the story is going to continue like with new actors because they've gotten older. But this one is set in the time period of 1956 to 64. And it's going to follow an Elizabeth who is, first of all, giving birth to two more children. So that's going to be interesting because we didn't really get to see their first two children as young, and we'll see her and Philip go on more adventures, and we'll see her deal with some of the scandals surrounding Philip's rumored infidelity, which is one of those things where I'm just like, I was so in awe in season one, and it's going to be even more interesting now in season two to see how they deal with this like living history, which we don't actually have any answers to, because by all accounts, the Philip cheating rumors were just rumors. But in this trailer, at least, it kind of looks like they're going to like say that he cheated. So like, how do they do that? Because these people are still alive. And like, this isn't like an official account. So that's going to be really interesting. And I hate myself for saying this, but I'm super intrigued with the drama of it all. And we're also going to see President Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy, and they're going to be played by Michael C. Hall and Jodie Balfour. So it's a lot to look forward to. Have you seen the trailer? Have you seen season one?
I have.
Are you hyped?
I have. I'm so hyped. I feel like I don't know. Well, whatever. It doesn't matter. But yeah, I really love season one. I was so swept away by, it's just such a beautiful show. Like, it's aesthetically pleasing to the eyes. And it's also just completely fascinating to see how they go about bringing some of these things to life, and specifically because, you know, like you said, she's like living history. And I'm also intrigued too, like, look, I'm like very intrigued also by this era in America. So mm-hmm. I'm also intrigued to see how they go about portraying that, even though we have seen that. I think America is more lax about portraying, you know, certain eras and in politics and things like that, much more so than
yeah,
maybe,
and
like
people
England
like
is.
All of those, like, yeah, Britney Spears Lifetime movie or whatever.
Well, I was like, like, you know, on a more care. Serious note, how many times have we seen like Jackie and mm-hmm. Kennedy brought to life, you know? Mm-hmm. it's nothing new, but I am always intrigued to see how the interpretation goes, and specifically it will be interesting to see how their relationship is portrayed in terms of how the Crown has been progressing. Yeah. So yeah, it should be really fun. Do we have a release date for this yet?
Yes, it's gonna come out on December 8th.
Perfect, just in time for the holidays.
Yes.
Well, here is some more fun Netflix news. Glow, which kind of was the runaway hit about the what is it, the Gorgeous Women, Ladies of Female
Of wrestling.
Of wrestling, that's the one. Yeah, that's the acronym. This show has been touted for its diversity. Everybody is kind of like on board with it. And it looks like Netflix has paid attention because they've officially renewed Glow for season two, which is really exciting if you've been keeping up with this. I haven't gotten around to watching it, but everybody I know is like, you would love this show. So now that it's been renewed, I'm going to have to move it up to the top of my queue. But you've seen this, right?
Well, I saw the first episode.
Mm.
I wasn't like super into it.
Mm. I hear it gets really good.
Yeah. That's yeah. Marimo was talking about how like she got like a few episodes into it and then she really liked it. And she also said, because one of my issues with it was that Allison Brie, the who plays the lead, like she was very insufferable. And Marimo said that, yes, she was. That's okay. It's still good.
Well, it's good news if you have finished the series, like I know many of our listeners have, so you can look forward to new episodes. Unfortunately, Netflix did not announce when we'll be able to get our hands on those, but I'm assuming that they'll probably release that slate mm-hmm. very soon. Usually it's about a year after the first season goes up, so I wouldn't be surprised if we see it sometime next year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so again, staying on Netflix, God, we're going to be so, we're not going to have time for anything with all these things I have to watch. This one is a for sure mark in the calendar. So Netflix's Medici, Masters of Florence. It's the season one is on Netflix now. And this is another one that I've sort of been pushing around on my to watch list because obviously it takes place in Florence. And it's about the Renaissance era of Florence. And I actually lived in Florence when I was younger. So I'm like, I have to watch this. And also it starred, Richard Madden from Game of Thrones. But in season two, they're actually going to jump, I think, about 20 years into the future. And they're going to pick up with a new cast, which is led by Daniel Sharman from Teen Wolf and Fear the Walking Dead and the Originals. And old friend of the show, Bradley James, from Merlin and Damien and iZombie, and they're going to be playing brothers, Lorenzo and Giuliano. And the two of them are going to be basically part of the leading family of Florence that helped, you know, it's a young Lorenzo the Magnificent who kind of helped to make Florence this big hot spot of finance and culture in Renaissance, early Renaissance Europe, and he was a big proponent of the Renaissance. He's a really interesting historical figure. This season will also be featuring Gotham's Julian Sands, as well as Sarah Parrish and Sean Bean, and Alessandra Mastronardi and Sandro Botticelli and Raul Bova will also star. Is this our new favorite show?
Yeah, this is our new favorite show that we haven't binged yet.
Yes.
But rest assured, that's going to be happening soon. Maybe we should watch Medici first together.
I know. Just forget Merlin for a while and just...
Just for like, what is this, probably 8 to 12 episodes?
Yeah, maybe. We should have a poll and let the listeners decide.
Want to watch Medici with us for obvious reasons.
Yes. But, I mean, they're obviously going to be in the second season. They're not in the first season, but the first season is available now, and it also stars Dustin Hoffman, which I guess is interesting too. So you should all go watch that over on Netflix. That's your homework this week, so that we can all get hyped about Medici season 2, our new favorite series, together.
Okay, so we have a little bit of Riverdale news for you guys. I know that you've like officially jumped off this boat. You're not.
Yeah, no.
Right? Okay. Well, I'm still on the train.
Good for you.
I'm sure that some people are too. It's just Riverdale's a show that I cannot quit, and I'm not sure why.
They're
definitely looking to spice things up in season 2, though, because their showrunner announced just last week that Veronica's ex-boyfriend will be paying a visit to town, and that is sure to cause a little bit of drama. His name is Nick St. Clair, and he's going to be portrayed by The Good Wife alum Graham Phillips. So if you guys watched that show, he played Alicia's son on The Good Wife. And when he comes into town, it could spell trouble, not necessarily just for Veronica and Archie, who are, of course, officially a couple now, but he could also put a few of the characters in danger. He didn't say much more than that, but he did tweet a picture of KJ Apa, Camila Mendes, and Graham Phillips on set. We know that he's going to show up for at least 2 episodes in season 2, so it'll be interesting to see how they kind of tie that into what's been going on in Riverdale since we last left off. And if you're still watching like me, Riverdale season 2 hits the CW on October 11th at 9 p.m. So I'll be tuning in.
Awesome. Well, I'll be tuning in. I'll say, actually, I'll switch these two around because this ties in nicely. We'll stay with the CW for something that, you know, if you're not going to watch the Riverdale, why don't you just watch The 100 with me? That should be fun. Yay, exciting times. So The 100 season 5 is officially in production in Vancouver, and as you know, to commemorate the occasion, and because fans have been screaming at them on Twitter, the writers have been revealing some first look images of the cast. And obviously, this is not just exciting because we like looking at the cast, but because the season 4, by the way, spoilers if you haven't watched the end of season 4 yet, but what are you waiting for? Come on, guys. You have a little bit of a very substantial time jump at the end of season 4, which means that the characters are going to look remarkably different in season 5, because obviously they're going to need some markers to show that time has passed, that we're dealing with older and different characters. And we obviously, the only one we know what looks like is Clark. So the image that they released of Clark wasn't actually how she looks in the flash forward, but how she's probably going to look in one of the flashbacks. She has her long hair and she has like a reddish grape colored shirt. And this, along with the sort of unofficial announcement that they've cast a young Maddie who will be played by Lena Renna, kind of confirms, obviously, which we kind of, you know, assumed, but it's nice to see the pieces come together, that she's going to be meeting a young Maddie and we're going to sort of see the two of them together, you know, over this period of time. And then the writers have also released some pictures of most of the space squad. The only one who's missing is Imori, which is, I'm always worried. So I'm like, where's Imori? What's happening? Is she okay? But the rest of them look fantastic. Bob Morley has his, you know, flash forward beard, which I predicted because that is the rule of flash forwards. And that looks great. Murphy, Richard Harmond, and Chris Larkin, who plays Monty, both have spiffy new haircuts. And if you've seen the picture, you know that the thing that, you know, you immediately want to get super excited about is Monty's apron, which is amazing, and on which someone has written, "Make algae, not war," or "algae, make algae, not war," which is amazing. And so Monty, it just made me so happy, because like, this is why I love the show. It's because they're such dorks. And who else? We've seen a couple of pictures. We've seen Chelsea Reese as Harper. She doesn't look super different. Tasha Tellez and Lindsay Morgan, who play Echo and Raven, are both on set, but you know they weren't in costume when they took the pictures, so we don't really know what they look like. A couple of new, like everyone's getting a makeover, which is exciting. Maria Avgaropoulos has a bit shorter hair, though it's not the Furiosa look I was hoping for. Jared Joseph has a very elaborate new hairstyle, and he had a buzz cut in season 4, so he has longer hair now, which kind of, obviously instantly I'm like, does this mean he won't be in the flashback? Because I'm such a dork. And Sachin Sahel has a beard, and that's it. That's all of the people that we've seen so far, which means that, and we don't even know if this is their final looks or if this is for some part of the flashback. So there's still a lot we don't know, but I think it's really, really cool that we got so many looks of our cast as they would appear to look now after the 6-year time jump. And the final sort of related piece of news to this we have is that it appears that we have a recasting of Maddie, not the flash forward or flashback Maddie, but the one who appears in present time. The actress who portrayed her in the season 4 finale was Imogen Tyr, but everywhere it would appear that actress Lola Flannery from Shadowhunters is actually taking over the role and is going to be the new present day Maddie instead of Imogen Tyr. They look fantastic, and I'm really excited. Have you seen his images?
I have. I think that it's so fun to finally see like what they're going to look like, because like you said, a lot of it is usually just like hair is the easiest thing to change when you're trying to flash forward or flash back. But I think they all look really good. I mean, like, has the fan reaction been pretty well? Because I know you're pretty deep in the trenches of like stan fandom for the 100. Like, is everybody pretty happy?
How did that happen? Yes. I mean, there's been a little bit. The funny thing is obviously that I'm such a bad judge of this, because literally, you know, I look at Bellamy's beard and I'm like, oh, great. You can see that he's flash forward because he has a beard now. Whereas most of the fandom is like, I think he looks great. Or I think I prefer the non-beard Bellamy. And I'm just like, but flash forward though. But no, I think the reaction has been overwhelmingly positive. There's people who I think resist the change. And I think that sort of has... Well, it probably also has to do with how they look, but I think that also has to do with just the idea that they're flashing so much into the future. Like, seeing them look so different is kind of like a wake-up call that they're going to be very different, which I think some people aren't very happy about.
Yeah, I think, like, Monty's hair was, like, the biggest shock, but not in fact, because he lost this little, like, Moppet hair, you know? Which really made him look so much younger. Time. So now he looks like an adult.
Which is smart. Like, they really made these, like, it feels like they've made a conscious effort to make them all look older. Whether that's like in Bellamy's case, he looks a little bit like wilder. And in Murphy and Monty's case, they've gotten really nice adult haircuts as opposed to like what they were running around with in previous seasons. So I think that's actually kind of interesting.
I wonder how much say they had in the transformations, though, because I know with Pretty Little Liars, which is like the most recent example I can think of in terms of like a time forward, Troy and Belisario, who plays Spencer Hastings on the show, said that they were able to kind of choose. And so she said, I got bangs thinking this is like the least crazy I could go. And then the fandom was like, Spencer should never have bangs. And everybody was like really upset. So I love that the 100 fandom sounds like they've pretty much embraced this. But I do kind of wonder how much say they had in their own transformations.
I know they did, because that's what came out of Comic-Con, was that Maria Avgaropoulos was like, well, there's a pretty big hair change for Octavia, but I haven't agreed to it yet. So, we're all thinking that's kind of because it was meant to be super short. And obviously the haircut that she has right now, at least, is this shoulder length. So either she didn't agree to it and this is just kind of the compromise, or it's, you know, she has shoulder length hair now because she's going to be filming some flashbacks, and then when we see her in present day, she has even shorter hair. I'm not giving up on this Furiosa concept. I will believe it until the end of the season. I think that they do have a lot of say in it, and this was probably also a chance for them to clean up a little bit, you know? Like, you look at, like, Murphy's haircut. Like, yeah, I can believe that 6 years in space, someone got really good at styling and cutting people's hair, but it's also just very modern and nice looking, you know, without taking into account that this is a post-apocalyptic, no hairdresser kind of world. And I'm okay with that. I think that's fine. But it's also just kind of funny. It's amazing how much you can talk about someone's like hair and outfit. But I do think this sort of like, just to bring it back to the fan base and then we can move on. I just think it is kind of interesting that people are reacting so much to the changes, because like from season to season, people always have opinions about what they think their actor should look like. But this one is, because the changes are so closely tied into how much the world and the story is going to change. I also think there's some kind of like added anxiety. Whereas for me, the more different, the better. Like, I'm so excited about this time jump because I think the more they change, the more they have a chance to sort of reflect back on the story as it used to be and like where they want to bring these characters. So I say change it all. I don't care. I'm ready for it. I hope that we get to see some of the Bunker crew as well, although I also want them to keep things a secret, so I'm really torn. But I like what we do get to see. How wonderful. And our final news story is something that I'm also super, super excited about, which is the Good Omens production that is being adapted by Neil Gaiman from the amazing, iconic novel that Neil Gaiman wrote with the now passed away Terry Pratchett. It's finally going to be adapted for the screen, and we have our main characters, Aziraphale and Crowley. I really should know how to say it because I listened to the audio play recently. Anyway, they're going to be played by Michael Sheen and David Tennant, which is so cool. I'm so excited. I was so happy when I saw this news because I love Big Omens and I love David Tennant. Michael Sheen, I like Michael Sheen too, but David Tennant is really where it's at for me. So I think this is so cool. I'm so happy. I'm so ready. I don't know if you've read it. If you haven't read it yet, you should listen to the audio play because one of the characters is voiced by Colin Morgan.
That's I've listened to that, but okay. I haven't read the book, but I have a copy of the book, so maybe I should read the book instead of re-listening to the audio play.
Maybe you should. No, it's fine. It's the same story either way. You'll be okay.
That's true.
With
yeah. I love, by the way, side note that the UK still does like these grand like radio play productions because it's such a dying art, I feel like.
I know, like, Alex Vlahos is doing a bunch of big Finnish productions of Dorian Gray and stuff, and those have been really fun to listen to as well, so I agree. But I'm happy with this. I'm happy that Neil Gaiman is so involved, and I'm happy we're getting this fantastic cast.
Me too.
And, So that brings us to the end of the news. We're going to move into TV show of the week now. Go for it.
Okay, I'll start because we're going to talk about the other one together.
Yeah.
So I need a little bit of a break from all the dramatic shows that I've been watching lately. So I finally got around to checking out Younger, which is actually a TV Land show, but Hulu has all of the first two seasons in full up on there. So I was just like binging it. And this show is so much fun. It stars everybody's favorite Broadway queen, Sutton Foster, as a recently divorced 40-something, now single mother, and she's trying to get a job in the workforce, and she can't. So in order to kind of beat the system, because she's been out of work for so long, she decides to fake her age and go in as a 26-year-old so that she can be an executive assistant to this woman that works in a publishing house. And then while she's there, she makes friends with a character played by Hilary Duff, who actually is in her 20s, and the story kind of goes from there about, you know, what she learns about playing somebody who's younger, like trying to pretend to be somebody who's younger, and so on and so forth. But the comedy is like, it's like a sitcom, so it's only 25 minutes per episode or something like that. Super easy to binge. It's really charming. It's really, really funny. If you haven't watched it yet, definitely worth watching the pilot at least. I was hooked from the first episode. I thought it was really, really fun. So yeah, if you're looking for something fun and light to watch, I highly recommend Younger.
I'm so glad that you said that and that you mentioned that on the show, because I have been wanting a more lighthearted show to watch as well. And I had no idea that Younger was a lighthearted show. I thought that, I think I've kind of mixed it up with Big Little Lies in my head, because that's another one that I really want to watch. And so I was just like, what am I going to watch? What am I going to watch? And then I was like, well, there's Big Little Lies and there's Younger. And I was like, oh my God, they're both going to be like emotionally exhausting. I'm just not going to watch anything. And that's when I ended up reading The Raven Cycle. So that's good to know. I had no idea. Totally misunderstood what the show was about. And I'm excited to see Hilary Duff in this role. So
yeah, I think honestly, like, it's not the same, but kind of the same, but not. If you've been really liking the bold type, I feel like you're really gonna like mm-hmm. Younger. If you're looking for something else that's kind of like fun and lighthearted for the summer, again, like, it kind of like, it's not fair to compare the two, but it's similar. You know, like, girls living in New York, you know, trying to scratch their way up in these big time companies. And yeah, there's a lot of like really strong women on Younger as well. And it's kind of like, at its core, I think it is a story about like empowering yourself and finding, you know, having the opportunity to have that second life after the first part of your life is over, because that's essentially what Sutton Foster is doing in this role. So
cool. Okay, so let's move on and talk a little bit about Game of Thrones. We're not going to talk about the episode that isn't out yet, guys, so don't worry about it. If you haven't seen, HBO has been battling leaks, and its most recent leak came from Within when HBO Spain accidentally released next week's episode early, so stay alert. Constant vigilance on social media so you don't get spoiled. We're going to be talking about episode 5. So tell me what you thought about episode 5.
Can we just, like, address the elephant in the room, which is, like, obviously the most important part of episode 5?
What?
Which is that Gendry's finally back.
Ah, no! I'm not going to scream into the microphone.
I feel like we just need to get that out of the way now, because it was so exciting and we've waited so long.
Oh, my God. Gendry's back, you guys. Gendry of Thrones. Hashtag.
He looks he so who good. Rose. Hashtag please don't die.
Oh my God. I swear, if they bring him back just to kill him, I'm gonna be so kill pissed somebody. Off.
Seriously. And he's like gonna be BFFs with Jon, and it's gonna be great.
I mean, seriously, when last week I wrote the, like, when is Gendry gonna come back article, knowing that he was gonna come back the following week. And I also, you know, I actually mentioned that in the article, and then I had like a bunch of people on Twitter being like, he's coming back next week. And I was like, people never read my article. This is just definitive proof. But yes, Gendry's back, and he had this amazing scene first with Davos, who is another fantastic character. And Davos, you know, looked into the eyes of the camera like he was in the office and said, I thought you would still be rowing. And we all rolled with laughter, and it was amazing. And Gendry has a hammer now, like Thor, and, you know, he's basically, it's so funny that they basically just brought Gendry back. Like, I'm not complaining, but it is funny that they just brought Gendry back, brought him to Dragonstone, and then brought him beyond the wall in the span of one episode after he's been gone for 4 seasons. I think that is, like,
I mean, there's no time
ridiculous...
to dance around. They can't be, like, wandering in the woods for 3 episodes.
I know, but they could have brought him back in season 5.
That's
and then
true.
This journey
and
would
then
have
we wouldn't
made
have had this problem.
Sense.
Yeah, and now they're going off into this into like the snowy abyss, like a badass ragtag bunch of martyrs, and
dudes.
It just actually, like, it was like the Brotherhood's back too, which is kind of crazy because, you know, we had seen flashes of the Hound and stuff like that, but nothing quite this, like, oh, like, obviously an integral part. Of course, we saw, what's his name? The guy that keeps getting brought back to life. I always forget his name because we haven't seen him in a while. The one with the eye patch.
Beric Dondarrion? Is that him
so.
Or his friend?
Yeah. And, like, one of them we saw him in the teaser trailer for this season, so we kind of knew he was going to play some kind of role, but it is kind of, it's kind of fun to see, like, the bigger moments in the teasers that we got before the series started kind of materialize into the actual fold of the actual season. So we're kind of getting to those bigger moments, and it makes sense because we're almost at the end of season 7.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's so weird. Like, a bunch of different stuff happened in this episode as well. Like, we found out that Cersei is pregnant, which is weird. Like, This is a weird... I feel like there's a couple of things in this episode that feel like really weird inserts considering how little time is left in the show. And one of them was, why bring Gendry back now? What is his purpose going to be? Hopefully not just to die beyond the wall. And why give Cersei this new plot? Like, I think that she's not actually pregnant. Like, I think that this all plays into the her end game, which is going to end up with Jaime being the one to kill her, which is going to have something to do with this. And I also think, because it doesn't fit with the prophecy, which said she would only have 3 kids. So this is kind of a weird thing to throw in there. But I think Cersei's ending is close, you know? Like, I really have a feeling.
Yeah, she's kind of like... well, her character is really interesting, and especially this season. And I think that you're right. I wouldn't be surprised if her ending is close, just because, like, she stopped caring about everything. Whereas mm-hmm. before it was like she didn't really care what she did, like, behind closed doors, but she never wanted anybody to know about her dirty laundry. You know, she's just like, oh, yeah, I'll just tell everybody that you're the father and who cares? I'll just kill whoever is like, that's gross, you know?
Yeah.
So she's like, she's almost like she's on a suicide mission, and she kind of like has accepted that. So she's going to go out guns blazing, which makes sense for her character, I guess, in the long haul.
Yeah. And what do you think about Arya and Sansa and how it seems like they're being played by Littlefinger?
I'm so scared for Arya, but she can handle herself, so I'm sure it'll be fine. But that was a really intense scene, too, where she was, you know, essentially following Littlefinger around for days, and then he was clearly onto her and saw her. And so I'm assuming that we're going to get a showdown between those two very soon. And I hope it doesn't come at the cost of Arya and Sansa's relationship, because it's already, like, a little strained.
It is, and that's what frustrates me, because, like, I guess that we've had so many reunions kind of go smoothly that we should expect that some of them aren't necessarily going to go as smoothly. But what really frustrates me is that Arya coming back to Winterfell feels like, unless it's all a big ruse, which I wouldn't be surprised if it turned out that they were, like, triple playing him. But what it seems like on the outset is that Arya's come back to Winterfell and she's really kind of, like, regressed in a way. Like, all of the superiority that she has felt as this, like, lone wolf, no pun intended, is kind of going away, because she's, all of these feelings that she has about Sansa and about, you know, her parents and about Sansa getting everything she wants, and the fact that she hasn't seen the kind of person that Sansa's had to become to get into the position that she's in. It feels like it's kind of clouding Arya's judgment, and it's making her treat Sansa in a way that Sansa just doesn't deserve, you know, because it doesn't feel like Sansa is actually, unlike in earlier seasons where I think she was much more the guilty party whenever they kind of got into things. I think now Sansa is doing what she can, and she's trying to do a really good job, and she has these crazy siblings around her, you know, that just aren't really connecting with her anymore. And Arya is kind of like attacking her Arya shouldn't be directing her attacks at her family. She should be directing them at their enemies. She shouldn't be trying to make an enemy out of Sansa. And so I find that extremely disingenuous to who Arya is. And it's kind of like the worst version of Arya, I guess. So that's why I really, really hope it's all a ruse, because otherwise it's playing to some things about Arya and the sort of power dynamic between the Stark sisters that I'm not a huge fan of.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's just like, there's been so, it does feel, like you said, regression, and kind of like on both their parts, because bickering, like, you know, children and being so petty, that's something that I would have hoped that they would have grown out of, if only for the greater good, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is coming from Arya, and that's what strikes me as being strange.
Right.
But then I also just wanted to touch on, and if there's anything else you want to touch on, after, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about Daenerys as well and her decisions this week in terms of, because I know there's been a lot of debate about this in fandom, and I always so staunchly, and it's weird because it's not even like I'm a huge Daenerys fan necessarily, but in this season in particular, I'm like, I'm with her 100% of the way. Like, whatever she does, and people go like, oh, she's a mad queen. And I'm just like, no. Like, I feel so connected to her, her cause and the things that she's doing to try to sort of reconcile having to, you know, be a conqueror and being, you know, the human that she is. And I think, you know, obviously the rip Sir Percival, it was fun while it lasted, hashtag Merlin forever, you know, when she had those men from Lannister and she kind of said, you know, bend the knee or die, and then they didn't all bend the knee, and then she was in the position where either she made a statement right there and got their, not their loyalty, but at least their, you know, not their resistance, and then, or she could be quote-unquote merciful as Tyrion wanted, but being merciful would also look weak. So she was in this position where she was like, you know what, I'm a conqueror, I have to do what is necessary. But I never felt like, I thought it was harsh, but I never felt like it was mad queenish. How do you feel about all of this?
I don't know. It's just like, I kind of go back and forth with it, but I totally get, I guess, where you're coming from, because if you back somebody like Daenerys into a corner, of course, like, she's going to go with her trump card, which is, you know, mm-hmm. Basically how she won that first battle between the Lannisters and the Tarly army. So it makes sense, but I do kind of worry that she, I mean, like it or not, everybody kind of has a little bit of their parents in them. And so in her case, I think it's more of kind of just making sure that she, like, that people that she wants to rule understands that she is not like her father in certain ways, but doesn't have, like, she's not weak either, you know?
No, exactly. And that's it. She's not, like, people kind of seem to be expecting her to be, like, I don't know, like, maybe it's fair enough to expect her to be different from what the people that have come before her, but it's also just, like, we expect you to do exactly, like, conquer and rule and gain people's loyalty and respect by not, but you're not allowed to do XYZ thing. And it's like, well, how do you expect her to, you know, like, it's just, it's so unfair. Like, I have, I such, think it's like, just, I think way it's too just much hard. Real life.
So like, I understand like where John was coming from last episode, where he said, you know, if you run in there with your dragons, like, everybody's just going to see you just like your father. And like, that makes sense, mm-hmm. because as humans, like, we are genetically composed to associate what we see with our past experiences. And unfortunately for Daenerys, yes, it's bad in the case of her father.
Yeah.
So,
but at the same time, it's like, you know, she has to.
Yeah. It's she like, if she's going to win, because you're right.
She can't be nice.
Yeah, she can't.
She's not going to win by being nice.
Because if she's a pushover, like, she, mm-hmm. like, people are just going to walk all over her. So it is like, it's yeah. unfortunate, because like, there, in this case, it's very much like actual, like, international relations. Like, you really can't win. You know, there's yeah. two sides to everything. You got to go with the one that you feel like is the right decision for you and your people. And in her case, like, she felt as though that was the right decision. So whether or not it's wrong remains to be seen. We probably won't know until the end of the show if, like, the path that she's decided to go on is going to be good for her or bad for her.
Mm-hmm. And I think absolutely. I think there's plenty of scope in the story for, or there's definitely a possibility of her turning into the Mad Queen. But I think that, like, I don't see it now. Like, it could happen in the future, but I don't see any proof that that's where her story is going. And B, I think if the story goes there, I think it is missing an opportunity and falling into some very unfortunate sort of stereotypes about what we expect from our female leaders and how the sort of double standard that exists in what she's expected to be able to accomplish while adhering to certain rules that I don't think any of the male leaders in the show have been expected to adhere to. Like, everyone loved Robert, right? And how did he get the throne? He had a very, very bloody rebellion. And I know that was a different time and that maybe the people are hoping for something else, but they're not going to get something else if they expect a miracle. And if the only way that Daenerys can have any kind of a reasonable shot is if she produces a miracle, then I think that says a really bad thing about what we expect of Daenerys compared to everyone else in the show. However, and that's the last thing that I'll say, because I totally forgot about this, we did get a little bit of a hint again that Daenerys actually is not the first in line to the throne. Because, of course, we had this little aside. I'm really getting tired of how they reveal these big things in little asides, by the way. Like, I need them to just kind of tell somebody already. But in the place where the maesters live, that I forgot what it's called, the Citadel, you know, we had this little aside from Gilly kind of referring to an annulment between Prince Rhaegar and his wife. And obviously, we know the context of that is that he married Lyanna Stark in secret, and so that the child they had together, which is Jon, is a legitimate Targaryen, and that now, because Daenerys is a legitimate daughter of the king, Jon is a legitimate grandson of the king, so obviously he has the claim. Oh my god, some things about the show just really make me mad. But yeah, he has the claim, and I guess that's going to be a bit of an issue down the line. And I really hope that they don't turn her evil and put Jon on the throne, but I guess we'll see what happens. I didn't like this episode as much as last week, I have to admit, but I did like it. I thought it was pretty good. Gendry helped a lot.
Yeah, I want to watch, like, I might have to go track down episode 6. I'm very intrigued.
No, Pam, don't.
I can't help myself. I need
it. You have to wait 2 weeks until the finale.
Oh, that's true. That's true. There is something to be said about waiting, if only for that.
Yeah. Okay, but anyway, we would love to hear what everyone thinks of Game of Thrones. We do have a little bit of feedback to get through in the comments as well. But we're going to start with our listener feedback section this week by taking some of your Patreon comments. And this was from the question of the week. Do you want to take this?
Yeah. So we kind of decided last week that we were going to talk about some of our favorite young adult novels. And so we thought it'd be fun to hear from our patrons to see what some of their favorites are. And we were awful and mean, or I was, and told them to keep their list short, which is so hard with this genre because there's so many great books out there, but they were really, really concise. So we're going to read a few of these right now for you guys. Laura Morrow said, "Oh boy, this question is tough because all I read is YA, so I will give you my top favorites of this year. One, Roar by Cora Carmack, and it's about storm mages and literally is so well done. I also adore the Pushing the Limits series on the contemporary side, and my favorite book in that series is Dare You Two, that follows Beth and Ryan. I also really enjoy the Illuminae series, which you need to get the physical book for because it is told through found documents. I have so many more, but these are some of my faves from this year." Abby Benzine, I think, says, "YA is my jam. My favorite YA authors are Emery Lord, Sarah Dessen, Morgan Matson, and Jodie Lynn Anderson. Can't go wrong with any of their books. Other rock star books are Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe, Fangirl, and When Dimple Met Rishi." And then finally, we have a comment here from Emmy Foss who says, "Some queer YA recs, Everything Leads to You, Not Your Sidekick, Radio Silence, and the super sex positive, including both queer and non-queer characters, Cherry." So those are some fun recs from our patrons, and we're really excited to talk a little bit more for all of our patron subscribers about some of our favorite YA books in our bonus discussion.
Awesome. And we're going to move on to the comments from our listeners now. We have another one from Patreon here. I'll take this one from Elizabeth, who says she has another witch suggestion. So we're just going to keep these witch books coming. This one is for Practical Magic. It's all about these two witch sisters and was made into a film starring Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock. It's a great summer read, but warning, there's some physical abuse towards women within the novel, but there's very little of it. So we have a little bit of a warning and a great book suggestion. Wonderful. And I also gave very, very lengthy Discworld recs on Twitter as well, if anyone's interested, for the witch books in that series. Moving on to Twitter, do you want to get the first one? We can just alternate.
Yeah, let's do it. Alejandra says, "I am so happy you guys are going to start doing Merlin. It's been on my to watch list for a while now, and I can start it too. Yay, we're so happy you're going to watch with us. It's going to be so much fun.
I know, I can't wait to watch Medusa." Oh, wait. Okay, and Laura Morrow says, when you all were wishing Pam and Selena's brother a happy birthday, our brother, happy birthday. I listened to the eps the day after mine, so thank you for the adjacent wishes. By the way, if you're ever able to see Anastasia the musical, it is visually stunning. Happy birthday, Laura. We already said on Twitter, but we'll say it again here. We hope you had a wonderful birthday. She also says, Merlin Book Rex. I second the T.A. Baron series, and in the second to last land of stories, is that it? That sounds like that's
it. Oh, yeah, the Land of Stories by Chris Colfer, I think, right?
Oh, I get it now. Yeah. Sorry, Laura. This is what happens. In the second to last Land of Stories series, Merlin and Arthur play a role. Cool.
Tucker says, glad we're getting season 5 of The 100, but I wish it was 16 episodes of the show rather than 13. Sometimes the show feels rushed. Anyway, I'm excited.
Agreed. And Mark Noob says, the hashtag Hot Jafar thing is so amusing. He's hot, but I'm excited because he's a really good actor. My favorite performance are Rabat and Wolf.
Mr. Glass says, great show. Wasn't the plan for the Dark Tower series to start as a movie and then do a season and then flip-flop from movie to TV? That's a good question, Mr. Glass. And I'm not familiar enough with the plans for this to know if that's true or not. But if that is the case, then that's really interesting.
I don't really know what the plan of the movie is, but it hasn't done very well, so I don't really know what their plan is for going ahead. Lizzie Granger says, I completely agreed with everything you said about Winona Earp and Game of Thrones and hype. Thanks.
And one last comment here on Twitter from Shelley, who says, this is amazing. I'm blaming you guys for the fact that I started reading The Student Prince before watching Merlin. Oh my God, Lancelot is a vegan Buddhist. Oh, Shelley, just wait till you meet Mordred, because if I'm remembering correctly, it's great.
I love this. I love that you're going to be watching Merlin through the lens of
The student Prince. Which, of course, is the Merlin Arthur fanfic that Selena and I live and die by that we recommended last week.
This is amazing.
If you guys need a fanfic to read, clearly it stands on its own just fine.
Yes, that's so great. Okay, so we've got a couple of emails here now, too. I'm not going to let you take the first one.
Okay. First email here we have from Maria says, Selena, I think you totally missed the point about John. There's a huge reason why John won't bend the knee. John isn't a prideful person. He doesn't even want to be lord or king. Danny said they will accept a southern ruler if John will, and they probably will for the sake of the show. But the last time he did something against the wishes of his people, there was mutiny. His people did not even want him to go south, let alone come back and declare they have a new queen. This isn't about John bending the knee. If he bends, it means the whole north bends. It's not John's pride, it's the pride of the north. All those lords of the north don't think they'd be very pleased with John if he came back and said, oh, hey, I've got reinforcements, but we've also got to bow down to the Dragon Queen now. I can imagine Sansa's reaction. What the actual fuck did you do? He had a hard enough time bringing everybody to this point, kneeling to a southern queen. He's just asking for trouble. And as for Dany, she's all queen of the people, chosen by the people, breaker of chains. But in the next episode, apparently, she's given all the soldiers the ultimate ultimatum. Join me or die. Some breaker of chains she is. Love you guys and can't wait for Merlin, Maria.
Wow. yes, absolutely. This is about so much more than Jon. And I think that Jon Snow is sort of very characterized by his lack of ego. And maybe if I didn't make this clear last week, then I can make it clear now that what I was sort of reacting to with Jon's refusal to bend the knee wasn't necessarily that he doesn't have reasons for not bending the knee, because it is not a question of him alone bending the knee to Daenerys on sort of a personal level. He's bending the knee, as you said, on behalf of all the North, and that is something that he doesn't necessarily feel that he has, first of all, the right to do, and also that it is in the best interest of his cause to do that. But my issue with this is more the assumption from the fans that Daenerys is unreasonable for it demanding that he does this. Because I think that, like, you can argue that Jon is totally under the right not to bend the knee, but I don't think Daenerys is in the wrong for asking him to do so, if that makes sense. Like, if she wants to unite the Seven Kingdoms. This kind of speaks as well to her actions in this last episode. Like, if she wants to conquer and unite the Seven Kingdoms, then, you know, she can't start giving away kingdoms. You know, she can't, like, be like, okay, then you can keep your kingdom and I'm still going to help you come fight this enemy. Like, I'm sure once she sees proof of the White Walkers, this story is going to be advanced in, you know, they even said in this episode, they're basically willing to have a ceasefire with Cersei to fight this common enemy that Daenerys recognizes as a common enemy. But I don't think that if the question is, you know, Jon wants Daenerys to drop her war to go fight the war that he knows is more important, but that she doesn't know is more important because he hasn't proven that to her. And she's saying, fine, bend the knee to me. And he says, no, then I don't think he's in the wrong and she's, or he's in the right and she's in the wrong. Like, I think they're at a standstill. And I think that if push came to shove, it wouldn't be unreasonable for Jon to bend the knee to her. And I think that, like, I see your point, but I don't think I'm missing the point, but I think that you make an excellent point. So I hope that sort of, that makes sense. And I do really appreciate you bringing this up, because I didn't mention this last week, and I think it does deserve to be mentioned and sort of underlined three times that Jon is not bending the knee on his own behalf, but on behalf of all the North. And it's going to cause some interesting tension, I think, in coming episodes. And when they learn he's a Targaryen, it's going to cause a whole other kind of tension. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. So we have another email. Thank you for your email, Maria. We have another email from Laura, who says, "Hi, ladies. I had to email in with my thoughts about the last Divergent TV show developments. I have to admit, the story makes no sense to me at all. I was a big fan of the books, and when the movies first started, I actually liked the cast. However, when they got to movie 3, it diverted so much that it did not even reference the source material, and that was a problem for me. I'm most likely the only person in the world that was satisfied with the end of the series and want that story told from start to end. The only way they can gain me back as a fan is if they keep the TV show semi-connected to the source material, especially the end." Just my thoughts, Laura Morrow. I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm probably going to end up tuning in because I won't be able to stay away. I really like a train wreck when I see it. So.
Oh, no.
But I really hope for Laura, for your sake and for anybody else's sake who is a really big fan of these books, that they are able to come up with something that'll restore your faith in the story, because that's all anybody can ever hope for their favorite thing. So,
mm-hmm.
All right, we have one last email here from LeClaire, which is a follow-up to her email from last week. She says, "Hi, ladies. First of all, I wanted to apologize for the desperate tone of my email after watching the end of Merlin. I should say that I wrote that right after the season ended, and I was all emotions. I had waited for almost 5 years to watch the final season. I think I just wasn't ready to say goodbye. I've calmed down now, and I feel better about the last season after having a chance to process. I don't want to scare anybody away from watching Merlin. It will always be one of my favorite shows. I think everyone should watch it and enjoy it. I think the last season takes on a more serious tone, and I wasn't ready for that. I think I'll grow to appreciate that, though, given how the story needed to wrap up. Everyone should enjoy the bromance that is Arthur and Merlin. I'm excited to listen to your Merlin specials and relive the magic. Second, thank you for all of your suggestions. I binged Riverdale already, so I really do need more content to fill my time. Any more Merlin fanfics, TV recs, or books you have, feel free to send them my way."
Cool.
Yeah,
we should get on that.
I love that you followed up. Merlin
service. Yeah.
But, like, honestly, like, we get it. But you know what? This rewatch is going to be interesting, because I haven't seen the final season since the final season aired.
Yeah, same. That's why this is going to be so much fun, because, like, we were both so affected.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're documented effects. Like, our effects are heavily documented online. Like, our effects and our reactions are very well documented. So
I know. Yeah. There's actually one of the Merlin fanfics that was really good was the Hunger Games one. I really like that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a good one.
I don't remember what it was called, but it was like probably was something with either, the Hunger Games.
But, yeah, and you know what? There was also one that it might have been by Tributes, the same author, but there was one about that was pegged around the Selection too, which was really interesting and really well done, because I think the author had never read the Selection series either.
Oh.
So that was kind of interesting. But I do remember the Hunger Games one, and I did like that.
Yeah. I think it was called
Tributes. I'll look through my old history on whatever, wherever I was reading them, LeClaire, mm-hmm. and see if I can and send you some more. But don't expect, like, I won't probably remember how they ended, but I'll remember if I liked them.
Yeah. So that brings us to the end of this week's show. Thank you so much to everyone for listening and for your amazing feedback. If you guys want to send in any feedback, any reactions to us or the listeners or anything else, join the conversation. You can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can, if you want to, you can become a Patreon over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. And you can listen to our bonus discussion for National Book Lovers Day, where we talk about our favorite YA novels. And my video this week is going to be about my further thoughts on the Raven Cycle and the #MaraudersAU vibes that I picked up from it. So it's going to be so much fun, I hope. Well, the discussion is. I don't know about my video. We'll see. Anyway.
As a little bit of a side note, my video this week is actually available to all of our patrons because there's a fun little announcement at the end, and I talk in depth about my Pixar visit. So if you awesome. Are a patron, doesn't matter if you donate $2 or $5, you can watch that video now.
Cool. Well, check that out over on Patreon. And otherwise, then we will see you or hear you or read you next week for episode 158. My name is Lena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye.
Bye, guys. We're going to head into TV show of the week. This next story actually kind of made a lot of waves in terms of the entertainment news industry. Shonda Rhimes, who's
not course, quite the TV show of the week, though, but okay.
Oh, yeah. Did I say TV show of the week? I'm already like thinking about the end of the show. How sad. Let's start that over.
And we'll also be featuring... The season will also be featuring... Oh, my God. The season will also be fear. Oh my God, I can't speak. I'm so excited about Bradley James.
As you should be.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let's try again.